Seeing Count Drake, Kyla slipped through Queen Grayson's entourage, but for once, the casual invisibility of ordinariness failed him. A woman's hand touched his elbow. He turned and found himself staring into Tara Grayson's eyes. Those deep, green Grayson eyes were breathtaking, especially as Kyla involuntarily stared deeper. In another place, another time, born to different parents, Tara Grayson's evils would have been meaningless, for she was merely obliviously selfish. She had desires, and others existed to fulfill them. Her betrayals were casual, because she barely gave them a thought. Had she been born a miller's daughter, the damage she did would have been confined to jilted lovers and cheated customers.
I thought Logan and Rimbold had told me everything about you, Kyla Drake, but they could have warned me how handsome you are.
For some reason, the comment flustered Kyla. He'd always considered himself very average-looking, but looking into her eyes, he knew, that she meant what she said, even if she was saying it aloud to flatter him. He blinked and began blushing, and whatever it was that made him see into Tara faltered and disappeared.
And such beautiful eyes. You've got eyes that make a girl think you can see right through her.
I can.
Is that why you're blushing? Tell me, Marquis, what do you see when you look in my eyes?
It would be highly indiscreet for me to say, Your Highness.
Marquis, a man risks his tongue for speaking indiscreetly to a queen.
Tongues should be used to commit indiscretions, not discuss them.
Marquis, you'll have me blushing.
I'd be content with having you.
Marquis Drake, I consider it my duty to know the nobles who serve me. You will attend me in my chambers.
Yes, Your Highness.
Wait 10 minutes. The guards will allow you through the door. I expect your discretion.
Kyla nodded, smirking.
Have we met? There's something about you that seems so familiar.
Actually, we did meet once. I'm sorry I didn't make more of an impression on you.
Well, we'll remedy that.
Indeed.
Tara slipped away and Kyla saw Lantana Garawashi 15 paces away staring at him. Kyler's throat constricted, but though he didn't look pleased, Garawashi made no move toward him. Kyla looked around the room blankly, forgetting why he'd come in here in the first place. A girl broke away from Tara Grayson's circle and whispered to the guards at one of the doors. She turned. His eyes took in the large eyes, perfectly coiffed hair, clear skin, full lips, narrow waist, and lean, firm curves. It was Elena Drake. She was one of the Queen's handmaidens. Kyler had the sense of dislocation. He looked away from a little girl for a moment and found a woman in her place. Elena Drake was stunning. As she pointed him out to the guards to tell them to let him through to see the Queen, her eyes suddenly met his. Her face was a mask of disappointment and disgust. She thought she was being used to help her big brother cheat on her friend, Aline. She thought he'd become a marquess and was so enwrapped by the idea of bedding a queen that he'd left everything else behind. Worse than the anger was the monumental disappointment in her eyes. Until now, Kyla could do no wrong in Alina's eyes. He had been the slam until now. Queen Grayson, having made her excuses, left the room. Kyla turned away. Rimbold Drake disengaged from a conversation and was limping toward Kyla, leaning on his cane. His eyes went from Kyla's face to his hands and the rings that weren't there.
She's beautiful.
She looks like her mother Yolana did 20 years ago, albeit with more fire.
Yolana Drake had been as much of a mother to Kyla as he had allowed. She had been a woman unfailingly graceful. She had seemed to grow only more beautiful as the years had passed. Kyla told Drake as much.
It's enough to tempt a man to curse God.
Drake's eyes were stony. Kyla opened his mouth to ask a question, then closed it. In the next room, through the crowd listening to the bard, he saw a gorgeous blonde in a blue silk dress cut so low in back it barely covered her butt. Kyla's breath caught. For a mad moment, he thought it was Aline. Damn guilty conscience. Daedra and her perfect ass moved deeper into the crowd, as if looking for someone.
And you told me you gave up working the sheets.
Kyla, you're my son, or can be if you say the word. I give you permission to be tactless.
I wondered if it's harder for you when this shit happens. Sorry, I mean, I think what happened with Sarah and Mags and Yulana is awful and senseless, but I don't expect the world to make sense. I wondered if it was harder for you, since you think there's a god out there who could have stopped it but didn't.
Kyla, in the crucible of tragedy, explanations fail. When you stand before a tragedy and tell yourself that there is no sense to it, doesn't your heart break? I think that must be as hard for you as it is for me when I scream at God and demand to know why, and he says nothing. We will both survive this, Kyla. The difference is, on the other side, I will have hope.
A naive hope.
Show me the happy man who dares not hope.
Show me the brave man who dares not face the truth.
You think I'm a coward?
I didn't mean...
I'm sorry, that wasn't fair. But come, if she's following her usual routine, Her Highness will be expecting you soon.
Kyla gulped. Drake knew?
Actually, I did kind of want to ask. How much do you know about my gifts?
Is this the place to speak about that?
It's the time. I see guilt. Not always, but sometimes. Sometimes I could even tell what a man did.
The Sakage would kill for such power.
Drake raised a hand to forestall Kyla's protest.
But given that you're not interested in blackmail, to me it sounds like a terrible burden.
What I want to know is what it means. Why would I have such a power, or gift, or curse? Why would the god do such a thing?
Ah, I see. You're hoping I can give you some kind of justification for regicide.
Kyla glared bloody daggers at the spy returning with a full platter of hors d'oeuvres. The man abruptly changed course, nearly dropping the platter.
The existence of such an ability suggests something about my purpose, doesn't it?
That depends on what you see. Do you see crime or sin, or simply feelings of guilt? If crime, do you see all the crimes, from murder to setting up a market stand without permission? If you're in another country where an action that's illegal here isn't illegal, will a man crossing the border look different? If you see sin, you'll have to figure out whose definitions of sin apply, because I guarantee that my God and the 100 gods don't agree, or even Astara with Ishtara. If what you see is feelings of guilt, does the madman without a conscience appear cleaner than the girl who believes that her parents died in an accident because she lied about finishing her chores?
Shit. How come everyone I know is smarter than me? Whatever it is, I see the unclean. I want to know if that implies that I have a duty to do something about what I see.
She may deserve to die, Kyla, but you shouldn't kill her.
Everyone will be better off if I do.
Except you and me and my daughter and Logan and Mama Kay and everyone who loves you.
What do you mean?
Logan will put you to death, and losing you will hurt us deeply.
Sir, thank you for everything you've done for me. And everything you tried to do. I'm sorry I cost you so much.
Count Drake bowed his head and closed his eyes, leaning heavily on his cane.
Kyla, I've lost my wife and 2 daughters this year. I don't know if I can bear to lose a son.
Kyla squeezed the man's shoulder, marveling how fragile it felt. He looked into the Count's eyes.
Just so you know, you pass.
I what?
Kyla gave the man who'd once single-handedly introduced and abolished slavery in Sonaria a lopsided grin.
Whatever I see, guilt or whatever, you don't have it. You're clean.
A look of stunned disbelief shot across Drake's face, followed by something akin to awe. He stood transfixed.
May your God bless you, sir. You certainly deserve it.
Dorian and Janine were sitting together in the garden. He had dismissed his retainers and for a time they had sat without speaking.
I'm sorry I killed that Werdmeister.
Why? Because it upset me or because it was wrong?
I could have dealt with him in a manner less brutal.
He was responsible for those eighthlings, wasn't he?
Yes.
Janine plucked a red flower with six petals, each bearing a purple starburst. Caladorans considered a blooming star flower an omen of great good luck, because they bloomed only once every 7 years. Conversely, a dead star flower was the worst luck. In this garden, they bloomed constantly, but each bloom would die within hours of being plucked. The Vir was not good at sustaining life.
My lord, I'm sure you know that my father was a fool. What most people don't know is that my mother was brilliant. My father feared her, and he tried to marginalize her so she wouldn't grow more powerful than he was. She knew it, and she let him because she didn't care to turn her mind to politics. It was too rough, too dirty, too brutal for her. My father made 1,000 mistakes in ruling, but my mother's might have been bigger because she chose not to rule. I lost the man I love, a man who would have been a great king because of that. So I'm not going to turn away because ruling is messy. My people will deserve better of me. Nor will I settle for the soft hypocrisy of criticizing you as you face threats I can barely imagine.
I don't want to rule simply because I enjoy power. If it's for that, then it's for nothing. I want to undo everything that my father and his fathers have made of this country. I don't know if I can do it. I don't know if it can be done.
My lord, I see you usually being so decisive, so strong, and in the next moment you're here apologizing to me for something you had to do. Maybe you could have done it differently, but so what? There was an immediate threat, and you dealt with it. I'm trying to tell you that you don't need to be weak for me. I've seen enough weak men in my life. I guess my question is, and it's probably the same question your people have, are you going to be king, or are you trying to stay alive until you can run away?
Her words caught him. He hadn't once thought of himself growing old as God King. Had that been because he couldn't remember even a fragment of prophecy within himself as an old God King, or because he'd been afraid to throw in his lot wholeheartedly with this land? He hadn't thought about how things would be even a year from now, and thinking for such a short term, he'd ignored problems. He hadn't done anything to seal the Highland tribes to join him. He hadn't moved against Neff. He hadn't moved against the Eighthlings. If Janine saw his hesitation as weakness, how many others did too?
I am king, and I will be until the end of my life, however long that may be.
Then rule as you must be king.
Do you have any idea what that means? Here, with these people?
No, but I trust you.
The royal guards let Kyla pass without comment. Elena Drake stood near the door, arms folded under her breasts.
I'm sorry.
How could you do this to Elaine?
He walked past her and strode through quiet corridors up the stairs to the queen's apartments in a fog. The Kakari flicked out of his hand into the form of a dagger, then sucked back in. Was it always this simple for V? Some flirtation, a little innuendo, and your debtor isolated herself, arranged your entry, and helped keep your presence secret? After the lengths to which Kyler had gone for some kills, walking in an unlocked door seemed like cheating. The guards hadn't even taken the dagger from his belt. He'd seen so much death in this place. Tara Grayson's room was Gareth Ursul's old room. There had been statues of dead girls in the room bare weeks ago. What had they done with those statues of flesh made stony? If he ever found Trudana Jadwin, he would make Hugh Gibbet look kind. Kyla was surprised Tara was still fully clothed. She stepped close and kissed him softly, luxuriously, their only contact in their lips. She moved slowly backward, sucking on his lower lip. He followed, letting her take the lead. She closed the door and stepped into his embrace.
We'll have to be quick. I can't miss my own party, but if your tongue is half as talented as you suggest, I guarantee to reciprocate very soon.
What surprised Kyler was how easy it was. Tara was taller than Aline, and her lips not as full, but teasing her was the same. He traced fingertips down the backs of her arms, then, feigning growing passion, slid one hand to the back of her neck and the other to the soft curve of her buttock.
From the interplay
of starched stiffness and yielding flesh, he could tell she'd removed her undergarments.
Like I said, quick and clean. Later we can do long and dirty.
What was he doing? Why didn't he end this sad farce?
Finish the job, Kyla!
Kyla closed his eyes as Tara pushed him onto the bed, but as soon as he did, he imagined V standing beside the bed. She looked pissed. Kyla's eyes flew open as Tara crawled over him. She tugged her neckline down.
Kiss me.
V seemed to be standing right there, her eyes flaming, daring Kyla to do it and feel her wrath. The image made no sense, but that didn't make it any less powerful. Tara tugged her dress lower, brushing her bare breast against Kyla's face. His ear felt suddenly hot. Sickness and revulsion washed through him. His stomach cramped. Kyla fell off the bed and staggered to his feet. As his vision cleared, he saw Luke Grayson on top of his sister.
You fucking whorish cunt! How the fuck would you... You fucking slut! Tell your fucking cunt, I'll make you eat it, you dirty fucking diseased, nasty whore! You killed Natasa!
Luke drew a short dagger from his belt.
You killed our sister!
No, I swear!
Blood was pouring from a gash across her eyebrow, and her lips were fat and bloodied from Luke's fist. The last piece of darkness Kyler had seen in Tara's eyes fell into place.
She sent a messenger to the God King, telling him Natasa was traveling to Havamir, and she arranged for there only to be two guards with her.
Tara gaped. But Luke's eyes never left her face. The guilt written there was plain.
I did it for us. She was going to betray us. For the gods' sake, help me, Kyla.
It was a mistake. She could have faced Luke down. The last thing she should have done was remind him of the other man she'd been about to fuck. He stabbed at her back as she ran to a wall, caught the ribbon of her dress, and dropped the dagger. Tara found a bell rope and yanked on it over and over. Luke picked up the bloody dagger and walked forward. He stood in front of his sister as she collapsed on the floor. Kyla wondered if Luke saw what he saw. Tara Grayson, without power, without the hauteur, was a pitiful shadow. She hunched into the corner.
Please, Luke. Please, I love you. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Perhaps Luke did see the same thing as Kyla, because he stopped, paralyzed. He still held the dagger, but Kyla knew that he wouldn't use it now. Tara's wounds weren't fatal. Kyla was certain of that, especially not with a green Maja in the castle. Tara would recover, and she would owe the Chantry an enormous debt. She would put her brother to death, and she would capitalize on people's sympathy for her to move against her enemies, real or imagined. Poor Luke Grayson, the weak bastard, wasn't even 18 yet. Kyla slapped the young man hard and plucked the dagger from his hands.
Look at me!
Luke met his eyes, and Kyla waved the young man's soul.
Fuck! You're no killer, Luke Grayson. You marched right up here, didn't you? Walked past a dozen witnesses. I thought so.
Oh, what are you doing? Help me!
Kyla looked into Luke's eyes again and saw a young man bound in chains not of his own making. Luke was no saint, nor purely a victim, but he didn't deserve death.
Tell me one thing. If you could take the throne, would you?
Hell no!
He was telling the truth.
Then I give you these, Luke. First, knowledge. You're no killer. These wounds won't kill your sister. Second, your life. Make something of it. Third, I spare you a sight that would never leave you.
What?
Kyla rubbed Luke's bloody hands against his own. He cut Luke's tunic in two places with the dagger and finally stabbed him in the meat of his shoulder, shallowly.
What are you doing?
Kyla drew the mask of judgment over his face.
I've come for you, Terra.
He grabbed a fistful of hair and pulled her to her feet. He planted the dagger in her shoulder. With his right hand free, he pressed it against her wounded stomach to get it bloody. He wiped the blood on both sides of his face and pulled the dagger out of her shoulder. He stood behind her, using her body as a shield between him and the door. A dozen royal guards burst into the room, bristling with weaponry. Behind them, Logan Geyer and Duke Weseros and their guards pushed into the room. In seconds, they'd formed a half-circle around Kyler and the Queen. Dozens of weapons were leveled at Kyler.
Put it down! Put it down now!
Help me, please!
By the gods, Kyler, don't do this! Please!
For the job, it was perfect. Now, dozens of witnesses had seen Logan command Kyler to stop. There remained only one thing. Kyler painted a desperate expression on his face.
Luke tried to stop me and he couldn't. And you can't either.
Oh, God, no!
Kyler slashed the dagger through Tara Grayson's throat.
Mother, how are the wedding preparations coming?
Dwan Wariamo raised her eyes from the papers spread all over her desk. She loved lists.
Our protocols. I only worry about Oshobi's mother. I'd say she has the brain of a hummingbird, except hummingbirds can hover for a moment or two. I expect that Takeda's half of the ceremony to be an unmitigated disaster. I heard some lunatic arrived, claiming to be a Tofusin.
A Tofusin, she said, as if there were more than one.
Oh, he's nothing, some white-haired freak. Mother, I want your opinion. An insult's been done to our family honor that may be on some people's minds as we go into this wedding. So I think I have to deal with it now. One of the cousins cuckolded her husband. She swears it was long ago and brief, but its effects continue. What should I do?
Don Wariamo scrunched her eyebrows as if the answer was so obvious that Katie was stupid for asking.
A slut cannot be tolerated, Katie. A whore dishonors us all.
Very well. I'll see it taken care of.
Who is it?
Mother, I'm going to ask you a question. And if you lie to me, the consequences will be harsher than you can believe.
Katie! Is this how you speak to your mother?
None of that, Mother. What?
Your tone is so disrespectful, I...
Silence! Did you... Or did you not intercept letters that Solon sent to me?
Of course I did.
For how long?
I don't remember.
How long?
Years. Letters came every month, sometimes more often.
Every week?
I suppose.
What did you do with them, Mother?
That Solon was worse than his brother.
Don't you ever speak of that monster. Where are the letters?
They were a tissue of lies. I burned them.
When did he stop sending them?
I don't know. 10 years ago?
He didn't stop, did he? Don't you dare lie to me, by the gods. Don't you dare.
It's only a few times a year now. For all I knew, it was some imposter hoping to break your heart again, Kay. Don't let this stranger ruin everything. Even if it is Solon, you don't know him. If you postpone this wedding, it could mean the end of you. Harvest is the only time for a queen to marry, and if you delay, the seas will be impassable. The lords from the other isles won't be able to attend. You need this. We can't offend the Takedas again.
Clan Takeda had been a thorn in Katie's side since she'd taken the throne. They had angled and manipulated for years for this wedding, and if, as a younger woman, she had sworn she would never marry Oshobi, now she knew there was no other way.
Mother, is there anything else you haven't told me? Anything you want to confess?
Of course not.
I want you to think very carefully. You're not as good a liar as you believe.
There's nothing.
Katie had been wrong. Her mother was an excellent liar. Katie turned to a guard.
Summon my secretary and the chamberlain.
Kay, what are you doing?
The official stepped into the room in moments. Katie had had them waiting outside.
Mother, the woman you called a slut and a whore is you. You betrayed my father and dishonored us.
No, I never...
Did you expect to get away with it? You fornicated with an emperor, a man surrounded by bodyguards and slaves at all hours, and you, the lady of a high house, with bodyguards and slaves of your own. Did you think no one would notice?
There was real fear in Don Wariamo's face for the first time Katie had ever seen.
It didn't mean anything, Kay.
Until you got pregnant and didn't know who the father was.
Don Wariamo stood transfixed, as if she couldn't believe all of her secrets had yielded their rotten fruit on the same day. Around the room, officials and guards stood with mouths agape, barely daring to breathe.
I wonder for years, Mother, why a woman so ambitious wouldn't want me to have anything to do with Prince Solon. It's because you were afraid he was my brother. You were afraid that your whoring would lead me, innocently, to an incestuous bed. Apparently, your sense of honor is only diseased rather than non-existent.
Katie, I was young. He said he loved me.
Did you believe the Green Mages when they examined me? I had no idea why at the time. I was only 9 years old, too young to be showing talent yet. They found out that I was a Wariamo, didn't they? Weren't you relieved?
For a while. When Solon came home, a full blue mage at 19, he asked to see me discreetly. That's when I knew. He tried to be so subtle, swearing how he would never hurt you. But under it all, there were threats, Katie. What would happen when he got tired of you? What if I ever vexed him? He could destroy me with a word. I would be his slave for the rest of my life. What if you opposed him? He could lie, say the mages proved you were illegitimate. He was a mage himself. Everyone would believe it. We'd lose everything. Our only hope was to keep him away from us. It wasn't like I was hurting him. I even got him an offer for more schooling at Shokendi, which was a high honor.
Katie's face relaxed, despite her fury. The decision had been made. The truth was out. Now there was room for sorrow.
So you ruined my chances of happiness because you couldn't believe that the man I loved would keep his word.
I was protecting us. No one's as good as they pretend to be.
True in your case. Secretary Tayabusa, please record that the Queen Mother is henceforth stripped of all privileges and titles. She is banished from all the isles and territories of Seth, and if found on them after tomorrow, the penalty will be death. At dawn, Chamberlain Inoue, you will have her accompanied to the harbor. You will pay her passage to whatever port she chooses. You will give her 10,000 yas and make sure that she leaves. She may be accompanied by one servant, if one can be found who volunteers to accompany her.
Everyone was stunned.
Mother, if this were the first time you'd lied to me, I wouldn't do this. It is, however, the last time. Guards, I wish two of you to stay with her at all times. I doubt she will attempt to harm herself, but she has shown herself to be an adulteress and a liar. I don't expect theft is below her.
You can't do this!
I already have.
I'm your mother!
Katie stepped forward and put her hands on each side of her mother's face. She kissed her forehead. She took hold of the 6 platinum chains strung between her mother's cheeks and ear and tore them out.
No! You are Queen Mother no more! You are Don Wariamo no more! Henceforth, you are Don Outcast!
Guards!
The captain of the guard and his second stepped forward and took the outcast by each arm to lead her from the room.
Gay! Gay, please!
Captain, about what happened here?
The captain looked quickly at each of his men.
You can be assured of my men's complete discretion, Your Majesty.
On the contrary, no one will be punished for speaking of what happened here. My dead mother shamed my family, and I will not grant her the mercy of covering her deeds' insolence. Most of all, my betrothed and his family deserve to know the truth before they wed their honor to mine.
If the Takedas went ahead with the marriage, obviously knowing the truth, They would have a harder time destroying her than if she married and they found out about her shameful secret. Other than that, there were few things the Takedas could do. A coup was doubtful, despite Oshobi's popularity among the city guard. The Takedas postponing the marriage until spring was most likely, and that would give her time. Time might give her opportunities. Best for her personally and worst for Seth, the Takedas might cancel the wedding and withdraw to their home island. That would mean they would come back in the spring for war. At sunrise, V swung her feet over the side of her bed in her little room. She'd barely slept after leaving Sister Ariel, and she'd had horrible dreams about Kyler and oceans of blood. Maybe it was an omen. She was supposed to meet Aline this morning first thing. She touched the water basin.
Cold.
When ice crystals began to spider across the surface, she broke the ice and washed her face, gasping despite herself. In minutes, she finished her ablutions and pulled the ill-fitting Tyro's robe over her ill-fitting shift. V tied back her hair with the white ribbon Sister Ariel had given her.
You're up. You're going to see her.
She's up in the pommel of the Seraph sword.
Praying still, Ulysses. V, you're one of us now. The Seraph will pay your debts. If you need to, you can offer her whatever it takes.
I don't think she's looking for a bribe.
Nor do I. I expected I'd have to force you to go to her, V. The girl you used to be would never have done this. Well done.
Perfect. Now it was impossible to back down. V reached one of the upper floors where Full Sisters had their apartments. There was some pecking order to who had what floor and which sisters got the treasured southern exposures, but V had no idea how it worked. Mercifully, no one was in the hall. V followed the unflickering lamps to the southwest corner. The Seraph held a sword in her left hand, its point at her feet, the hilt coming above her waist held slightly to one side. The pommel of that giant sword was capped with a round jewel. The room was a globe from which sisters could see sunrise and sunset. The walls were always transparent. It was a sanctuary for those who needed to meditate. Or, as in Aline's case, pray. Aline was seated, looking toward the eastern mountains. The view was breathtaking. V had never been so high in her life. The punts in the lake below looked the size of her thumb. The mountains glowed. The sun was a jagged half-circle barely peeking over them. But V's eyes sought out Aline's face. Her skin glowed in the gentle light. Her eyes deep brown, her scars softened. She gestured for V to come stand with her, not glancing away from the horizon. Tentatively, V stepped up beside her. Together, they watched the sun rise. V didn't dare to turn and look Aline in the face.
I'm sorry if I interrupted your prayers.
She drew her knife and rested it across her palms.
I made you a promise. I've done you and Kylar a great wrong. If you wish, I deserve no less.
Aline took the knife.
His mercies are new every morning.
V blinked. She glanced over at Aline and saw a tear tracking down her cheek.
Huh? Whose?
The One God's. If he forgives you, how dare I not?
Aline took V's right hand with her left. Then she stood, shoulder to shoulder with her, looking at the newborn son.
I believe the God has a purpose for me, V. I don't know what it is, but I know it isn't murdering you. We're in a big mess, but we're in it together. All right?
Birdmeister Nef Dada sat beneath an oak at the mouth of Quarig's Pass, awaiting his spy. He hadn't brought any of the 200 Verdmeisters he'd gathered to the meeting. If his spy was caught, he didn't want her to be able to tell the Chantry anything useful. Of course, the catatonic tensor Ursul and Kali had traveled with him, and he kept them close, but hidden. Eris Buell arrived at moonrise. She was not an attractive woman. Her eyes were close set, her nose long, and her chin weak. She looked rather like a rat in makeup. Too much makeup at that. And she had moles everywhere. Gareth Ursul had long let it be known that his female progeny were worthless to him, except as killing practice for the Aethlings. It was half true. Most of the girls served to weed out boys too weak to murder their own sisters, but Gareth sent witch-born girls away at birth. Few became as valuable as Eris Buell. Years ago, Gareth learned that Eris had roused the Speaker's suspicions. Rather than lose her, Gareth had shipped her off to Alatera and arranged her marriage to a nobleman. Eris had then caught the crest of a rising tide of resentment among the chattel, the former magi who'd left the Chantry to marry. She was now poised to head that movement back to the Chantry, demanding recognition. Eris might even overthrow the Speaker.
Eris?
Verdmeister?
Eris liked to think too highly of herself, but she could obviously feel the nearness of Kali. That was enough to put anyone off balance.
I have a task for you. One of our spies tells me a woman named Viridiana Sovari has bonded a man with a set of compulsive earrings. Given the bond, we expect he will come to the Chantry soon.
I know the girl. She's the talk of the Chantry.
She doesn't matter. Let me be blunt. This man, Kyler, may hold Kurok. We've hired an extremely skilled thief to take it from him. We have reasons to trust our thief, but Kyler is very resourceful. He may track our man down. So, as soon as our man steals the sword, he'll signal you by raising two black flags on a fishing boat visible from your room in the Chantry. Check 3 times a day. When you see it, collect the sword and leave the city immediately. The thief is not to see your face or know anything about you, just as you know nothing about him. You'll pay him. He knows how much to expect.
Neff handed her a purse full of Alateran gold. She looked startled at the weight. Neff was lying to her, of course. He did believe that Kyler had briefly held Kurok, but he'd also seen how Ezra's wood changed on the day that Verdmeister Borsini had gone to his death, trying to take Kurok from Kyler. The sword of power was gone. Once something went into the wood, it stayed there. What Neff's thief was trying to steal was a normal sword, with one difference. It had been reported to Neff that Kyler's sword had a black blade. Kyler was hiding his Kakari, the black Kakari, the devourer of magic, on his sword. Neff was certain of it. If he was wrong, he would likely be dead by spring. He was running out of options. The things he thought would be easy had turned out to be viciously difficult. With 200 Verdmeisters, Neff had attacked the weaves Jorsenel Kestes had laid on Black Barrow hundreds of years ago. Even together, they'd only broken the first spell. Now it was possible to use the veer within the dead Dymain, the unchanging circle of land around the dome of Black Barrow. Before, anyone using the veer there would die instantly. It was better progress than anyone before Neff had made, but in itself it accomplished nothing. All the millions of Krall around Black Barrow were still magically sealed. No one could raise them. No one could raise the Titan Neff had found beneath the mighty dome of Black Barrow itself. With Kurok, Jorsenel Kestes had been more powerful alone than Neff was with 200 Verdmeisters. Neff's few successes seemed like nothing. He'd stirred up the wild men in the Freeze. He'd taught their shamans to raise Krull, though he'd deliberately taught them imperfectly in case he ever had to face them himself. He'd sown rumors about the weakness of the new God King among the Highland tribes. It would be enough to distract the new God King, but not enough for Neff to take the chains of office for himself. The Ursuls had long claimed that only an Ursul could take the veer from a Meister. That claim had meant the Meisters and Verdmeisters had never been a threat to a true Ursul. Any magical fight would end instantly. Neff had been certain it was a lie. He had staked everything on the belief that once he held Kali, it would be a simple matter to learn to remove the veer from whomever he wished. But so far, he hadn't even come close. If Neff didn't figure out something soon, any of the Aethlings could show up any day and remove the veer from Neff himself. There were ways out. but none was likely. If Neff actually recovered Korok, of course, he could shatter Jorson's work and anyone who rose against him, even without the Krull or the Strangers or Kali. If he could steal the Black Ikari, he could make it devour Jorson's magics, raise the Krull, and the Krull would crush anyone who rose against him. He could use the Black Ikari to walk into Ezra's wood and steal Korok and everything else there. His last hope was to raise Kali herself. It had been Kali's wish for as long as she had been worshipped. It was enshrined in every Kalidoran's prayer. Kalivos, Ras, and me. Kali, make your home in me. If Neff could give Kali a body, she would give him everything. Neff was preparing the magic and trying to find a proper host for Kali in case he needed to do it, but it was a last resort. Kali would surely teach him how to deny the Vir to the God King if Neff gave her true embodiment. But if Kali had a body, if she could give him everything, could she not also take everything from him? Neff turned pensive eyes toward Eris. He needed, as always with these arrogant children, to seal the lie.
If it is, Kurok, Eris, I'll give you whatever you ask. But there are two things you should know. You have not the power to wield it, even for an instant. It will kill you if you try. Second, I will kill you if you try. I know you can untie that weave, but one of my other spies at the Chantry will be checking on you. If you tamper with it, she has instructions to kill you. Don't worry. The weave is small enough to escape any but the closest magical examination.
Eris's face paled. It would, of course, be her death if any loyal sister found that weave. But Neff had also revealed that he had another spy close enough to her that the spy could check on the weave regularly.
How likely is it that Kyla has Kurok?
Not likely. But the prize is worth the possibility of losing you.
I want Alitera. That's my price. If it's Kurok, you'll take all Nidkiru. I want to be queen of Alitera. I have debts to repay.
Neff pretended to think about it.
Done.
The Night Angel Trilogy, Beyond the Shadows Part 1, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2008, Brent Weeks. Published by arrangement with Hatchet Book Group, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Publication copyright 2010 by The Cutting Corporation, Incorporated. All rights reserved. With performances by Eric Messner, Laura Quinn Anderson, Ren Casey, Ken Jackson, Christopher Graybill, Michael Glenn, Terrence Azelford, Tim Getman, M.B. Van Dorn, Elizabeth Jernigan, Rick Rowan, Colleen Delaney, Johann Detweiler, Tony Penny, Joe Brack, Casey Platt, Nanette Savard, Lily Beacon, Mort Shelby, James Lewis, Scott McCormick, and Yasmin Toison. Adapted and directed by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Richard Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Featuring original music composed and performed by Dan Smith, Johann Detweiler, Jack Francis, and Pierre Gerwin Langer. If you enjoyed the Night Angel Trilogy, be sure to look for R.A. Salvatore's Demon Wars Saga, available now in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for exciting previews of other graphic audio material.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Do you know what they are calling one of their leaders?
Who, God Voice?
The Togairu Rebels. One band of raiders has named their leader Ashwarawu. Do you know what that means? He who kills without mercy.
Our enemy is a Roo called Ashwarawu.
A mighty leader?
A coward who strikes at the vulnerable and retreats to the shadows. But of late, he grows bolder, and his attacks come nearer and nearer to Daryan.
I will line the steps with the heads of Chazole dog warriors.
You cannot fight a war alone. You have heard of Ashwarawu?
Ashwarawu gathers warriors as he roams from village to village. The baronies fear him.
We know where he is, or we know at least where you can go to be found.
Ashwarawu.
You are far from any village, woman.
I am where I'm meant to be.
Who are you, and why have you come?
I am Bryn Dariel. I have no home, and I was a wanderer until very recently when I happened upon a village controlled by a despised Yatol. I killed the Yatol, and his Chezole lackey beside him. And so again, I have no home.
Then you are welcome as one of my warriors.
How did you find us?
Perhaps you are not as well hidden as you believe.
How he found us is not as important as why he found us. What do the Shistatu see in our struggles that would so interest you, Mystic?
I have come to Togai to learn.
What is there to learn, Mystic? How to fight? How to die?
Perhaps how to live.
Kill the rats! Kill all of them!
Don't miss the cataclysmic action in Part 2 of the Demon Wars Saga Book 6, Transcendence. Available now in graphic audio.
What's happened?
Empire Line's Princess Philomena just arrived in system, squalling like a banshee. Apparently, the pirates hit Bissonnette and have taken over the government. Blew through the planetary space militia as if they weren't there.
This is more than one pirate gang could do. It'd take a space fleet near enough.
Do they have a name for themselves?
The Deep Space Benevolent Association, commanded by one Gamus Turek. What are you going to do about this fellow?
Kill him! When we can, at least.
Your niece Kai has a letter of marque.
She what? You just made her more of a target. There's no way she can fight effectively with that old crate she's in. And now you've given our enemies even more reason to go after her.
When I watched her for the year she was at the Academy, she'll make a better privateer than regular officer, actually. Intelligent, quick, capable, and if I'm not mistaken, has the true killer instinct.
I hope not.
Captain Vada, you've heard about the Philomena, of course.
Yes.
Captain Biston says the pirates had a whole fleet, 14 ships at least.
I know. What we need is a true interstellar force. I'm thinking of the other privateers. We need to find them, get them working with us. I think it's essential.
I don't see how. We don't even know where the others are, and I don't know how to fight a fleet action.
I do.
A lone assassin?
Miss Grace!
Caitlin, go in the kitchen and stay there.
The police!
Don't call them. Helen, how bad is it?
Not hurt, just stunned. Char?
Get Justin inside if you can. I'll get Char. Sorry. Easy now, Buttercup. Char, it's time to go in.
What happened to Rosie? Did you shoot Rosie? Bad word! Grandma said...
Stay down, Char. Stay flat and be quiet, and hold still no matter what. You!
You're having an interesting morning. Stay with me now, come on.
Vata's War, Book 3, Engaging the Enemy, Part 1, in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.